Give a little time for the child within you. Don't be afraid to be young and free. Undo the locks and throw away the keys and take off your shoes and socks and run you.
I'm Jesse Thorne, America's radio sweetheart.
And I'm Jordan Morris, boy detective.
And this is
Jordan,
Jesse, go!
Icicles, tricycles, ice cream, candy, lollipops, popsicles, licorice sticks, Solomon, Grundy, Raggedy Andy, Tweedledum and Tweedledee, home free.
This week, cardboard box trucks, some movies we saw recently, and some uniformly uncomfortable stories about debuts. Let's go. Welcome to Jordan, Jesse, Go. I am Jesse Thorne, America's radio sweetheart.
And I'm Jordan Morris, boy detective.
This week we are broadcasting live from a shopping mall in the Czech Republic. It turns out, quite nice recording facilities here in the middle of this shopping mall in the Czech Republic.
Who knew?
We're in Prague. If you're wondering where in the Czech Republic we are, Prague.
Prague.
Uh-huh. We're
just
basically
searching for some bargains.
We're looking for bargains, and we're also trying to find ourselves in 1997.
Right. We're just backpacking.
Yeah, we're just
checking out some other cultures.
Just learning about other people who are slightly dissimilar from us.
Yeah, food is so good.
It's really amazing, and the bud is unbelievable.
God.
Seriously kind bud.
Boys are so cute.
And the smack is fantastic. So close to the Middle East.
And the murdering that I do? Oh, forget about it. You cannot murder like this in America.
And my paranoid delusions are so vibrant. Anyway, welcome to Jordan, Jesse, Go. Can I broach a topic? This is like an intro topic. We're going to have stuff. We have stuff coming up. Of course, we had the debut contest. We have all kinds of cool stuff coming up on the show. But this is an issue that I've been meaning to bring up on this program because I know that literally thousands of people listen to this show, and one of them will know the answer and be able to explain it to me.
Okay, go for it.
We live here in Los Angeles, right?
Yeah.
Major city.
As far as I know.
I've also lived in San Francisco, another major city. I've seen this in both of those places. Maybe it's something that they have in other non-city urban areas.
Baltimore, I'm looking at you.
Yeah, but I don't know. I honestly don't know whether that's the case. This is what it is. It's a truck. Usually it's a broken down truck. And when I say broken down truck, I mean you almost can't believe that it's functional. You know what I'm talking about? Like, it's missing, like, the front right quarter panel, like, the entire quarter panel, so you can, like, see the axle sticking out of the side of the engine or whatever.
Sure.
And, you know, and it's kind of tied together with that kind of yellow nylon rope. You know what I'm talking about, that
yes,
rope?
Yes, I'm familiar with this truck and this rope.
Okay, it's a pickup truck, you know, a mid-sized pickup truck, not a large pickup truck. And the bed of the pickup truck has been extended. Not 1 foot or 2 feet skyward, but sometimes upwards of 6 to 8 feet skyward, so that there are slats on the side of the pickup truck that extend heavenward like the spire on a cathedral. They're like 12 feet tall. They're taller than the cab of the truck, significantly taller than the cab of the truck. You know, okay, you got the picture so far?
No, you lost me a truck.
Okay. Now,
you lost me at Jordan.
The bed of the truck is full of flattened cardboard boxes.
Yes. Now, okay, I think I know what you're talking about.
I'm pretty sure I know what they're doing. They're gathering cardboard boxes and taking them to some sort of recycling center, right?
That's what I would guess.
I mean, they're not building a fort or something like that.
No.
They're not just making something in their backyard out of corrugated cardboard or something. They've got to be going to a recycling center, right?
That would be my guess, yes. Although you're right, I don't know for sure.
Okay, now, but here's the real question.
Okay.
How, in the name of Jesus, could they possibly make enough money on cardboard boxes?
Yeah, you would think that the gas it took to drive. I mean, these are usually on the freeway, too,
like,
that you see
what,
these.
What could they How much can you get for a cardboard box? Like a bed, like if it was me, Let's just say I ran my own recycling center, and I don't. I'll grant you that point.
Sure.
But let's say that I did.
I mean, nor have you ever, or you don't have any family members who have ever.
No, I'm not at all familiar with the workings of a recycling center or of the whole sanitation industry. It's completely foreign to me.
Okay.
But I, if I were, Jordan, if I were to run a recycling center, okay, I would, for a bed full of flattened cardboard boxes, presuming they were nice boxes, like the tough kind that you used to carry fruit, you know that kind?
Mm-hmm.
Like a produce box?
Yeah, really like tough, a hardy,
like double a hardy,
thick box.
Maybe it's waxed. Maybe the cardboard has been waxed.
Sure.
That's $10.
Yeah.
A whole thing, that's what I'm willing to pay for it, $10. And then I'll recycle it and turn it into, I don't know, toilet paper rolls, maybe?
Well, I mean, maybe this person is an hourly employee of something and taking these boxes
so
to the
you're
recycling
saying
center.
That not only is there operating costs overhead,
right.
They have to buy rope to tie their truck back together.
Yeah.
They have to buy gasoline for the truck.
Mm-hmm.
They have to buy used tires for the truck.
Yes.
And patches to patch up the holes in the tires.
Yeah.
They have to buy, you know, one of those...
An Arlo Guthrie tape. The truck.
Exactly. They have to buy a pencil to fish the tape that's unspooled into the cassette player, out of the cassette player.
Tom Likas Flash Fridays bumper sticker. You get that for free.
That's a Los Angeles reference that everyone in our entire audience doesn't understand at all. I guess he's semi-national now, Tom Likas. Anyway.
I think, yeah, I mean, maybe West Coast, maybe Arizona.
Maybe they buy
big
like
in Yuma.
Like a bumper sticker with Jim Rome on it. Sports
I don't
radio
know that
personality,
one.
Jim Rome. Okay, anyway. I'm guessing that they're listening to the ethnic media. What we call the ethnic media.
Ah, so there. This is.
It's primarily middle-aged Chinese men, in my experience. Some middle-aged Vietnamese men, and I've noticed in Los Angeles some Latino guys doing it. But in San Francisco, it's certainly
maybe
run by
El Piolín bumper sticker.
Yeah, they'd all or El Cucuy. <It's>,
Radio Laser.
Radio Romántica. So, you know, they've got all these overhead costs. What you're asserting, Jordan, here, is that they have these overhead costs for the vehicle, right?
Yes.
They're paying an employee an hourly wage.
Mm-hmm.
Let's call it $5 an hour. Granted, that's under the minimum wage, but I'm guessing they're not operating a fully legitimate business here.
Yes.
And then you're suggesting to me, by suggesting that this person is not an owner-operator, you are suggesting to me that there is some sort of profit margin to be had.
Well, I mean, maybe they're a civic employee.
A civic employee?
Yeah.
You think the city of Los Angeles, like Mayor Antonio Villaraigosa, was like, let's muster our fleet of 1982 Datsun pickups.
Does that sound like something he would
and
do?
And middle-aged Vietnamese man.
Isn't that kind of part of his MO?
What? Part of Antonio Villaraigosa's MO is hiring new city employees to drive 1982 Datsuns?
Yes, I mean, you know, I don't know. I'm playing devil's advocate.
You're suggesting, Jordan, that it's some kind of make work program like the Works Progress Administration?
Yes, yeah, absolutely. Maybe it is something like that.
Maybe it's been going on since FDR was still in office.
Yeah, this is part of the New Deal.
Maybe it started in the Depression to put.
I just know it's just been like some bureaucratic red tape.
Yeah,
you know, since then.
It's never been able.
I think there were some Dust Bowl guys hauling, you know, fruit crates or something. And
the
that's
thing
just
is Senator Ted Stevens of Alaska has a powerful place on the Ways and Means Committee, and half of the funding goes to Alaska, so he's not going to let it up.
No.
He's not going to let go of it.
Something, this is a pork barrel gerrymandering situation.
But in all facetiousness aside, this is something that I really want to know the answer to. I want to know what in tarnation is going on with these trucks. How can they possibly make enough money? If it was full of steel scrap metal,
maybe
aluminum,
if
they were stealing aluminum siding off of people's suburban homes or collecting tin cans, even tin cans seem dramatically more valuable to me than cardboard boxes.
You would think.
So
no, I'm with you.
I mean, as strong as corrugated cardboard is for its weight, I can't imagine it's especially valuable for its weight. So if you have a theory about this, or if, God forbid, you actually know the answer, why, like, say, maybe your uncle works in the collecting cardboard boxes business?
Driving them around.
Exactly.
Maybe they're not driving them to a destination. Maybe they just take them around the block a couple of times.
Maybe.
Air them out.
Yeah, that's probably what it is. They just give them a call and say, hey, you want to go by the drive-in? Catch a movie and come back here and see what happens. No promises, but...
You're suggesting a man has sex with a box, Jesse?
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm suggesting.
I don't think that happens.
I wasn't really suggesting it. I was pretty much explicitly stating that a man was going to have... I mean, about as close as you can get. You know what I mean?
No, I do.
On a legal podcast. 206-984-4FUN. That's the answer hotline, folks. That's where you make my dreams of knowing what is going on here a reality. We have returned to Jordan, Jesse, Go. I'm Jesse Thorne, America's radio sweetheart.
And I'm Jordan Morris, boy detective.
This podcast, a production of MaximumFun.org. I'm going to do more plugs.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean,
say
it seems
website.
Like, I mean, the thousands of people listen, and some of them, I'm sure, don't visit the website. They don't know about the blog and everything.
How are they listening to the show, though, if they don't go to the website?
iTunes.
Oh, iTunes. Okay.
Yeah. No, nobody goes to the website.
Hmm.
No, they do. A lot of people go to the website, but not. But I think probably.
But iTunes mainly.
More people listen to the show than go to the website.
No,
that's my guess. That's what I think. Okay. I think more people listen.
Well,
to
then,
the
show. Well, then say the name of the website. By
MaximumFun.org.
Okay.
You know, you can. There's hot, red hot discussions of every show in our forums. This generates a lot more discussion than the Sound of Young America.
Yeah. These are hot button issues.
These are hot button issues. If you're going to touch on an issue. Like cardboard box trucks.
Cardboard box trucks, whether or not to buy a Nintendo DS.
You know, here's the thing, Jordan.
What?
I'm a lot like Carlos Mencia in this sense. I don't care what people want me to talk about.
You're just going to talk about...
okay
you
for
don't
me
care.
To talk about. I don't give a fuck. Seriously, Jordan, I could care less what... politicians.
Hold on, Jesse. You have to pay attention to what politicians want you to say.
No, I ignore politicians.
Well, okay, what about old people?
Fat cats. I ignore boring, snoozy old people.
Jesse, what? I can't get off of that stage.
And when
you can't say that up there.
When you touch on controversial issues like box trucks and the middle-aged Vietnamese men that typically drive them. You got to know that you're going to get some, what they call in the military, blowback.
Yeah, wow. I just hope you're prepared. The hammer is going to come down hard.
Can we talk about movies?
Yeah, let's talk about
movies.
Okay,
let's talk about movies. I went to see a movie this week. This is new for me.
So did I.
This is new for me, Jordan.
I guess I saw it last week. Sorry, go ahead.
This is part of my new lifestyle. I made $13,000 last year.
Wow.
So there wasn't a lot of extra for movies.
Okay.
I went to a movie, and I went to it at the Arclight, where it costs $12 to see a movie if it's a matinee.
Yeah, the Arclight in Hollywood. But you do have assigned seating.
Which was good because...
a giant chair.
Because besides myself and Teresa, there was an other person there. It was me and Teresa, one man who was sitting in the front, and an usher who had to do an introductory spiel to the film to the three of us, which was, needless to say, somewhat uncomfortable for both the usher and us.
Pretty much everybody involved loses in that situation.
Exactly.
I like how they told you who wrote the movie, though. I like hearing about that.
I don't think they told me who wrote the... Oh, yes, they did, because but they mentioned it among the many credits, because I went to see I Think I Love My Wife, and he mentioned, written and directed by and starring Chris Rock, and he wrote it with Louis C.K.
As an aspiring screenwriter, I like the idea that someone will say my name in a movie theater and maybe people will applaud.
Yeah, I don't like the applauding.
Yeah?
So lame. You know what I really don't like, though?
Mm-hmm.
Way more than I dislike applauding in a movie.
Mm-hmm.
People who stay to watch all the credits.
That's weird. Yeah, I have a couple friends who religiously do that, and I don't. I get so uncomfortable. I just
people
like
don't even have a reason to do it. They just do it to be a dork.
Yeah,
they're just being a jerk about being a dork. There's no reason to do that. There's the internet now; it tells you everything. If you're staying, if you're watching a movie where they're going to have something at the end of the credits, then you can stay and watch the credits,
like X-Men 3.
But
like
if
a surprise.
But people who say, like, I don't know, I just don't feel like I'm having a complete experience unless I watch all the credits for Key Grip and Best yeah. Boy.
Maybe you want to listen to the music, because sometimes those hit songs you love from the soundtrack only turn up at the end of the credits.
Yeah, I mean, I would never have bought the soundtrack to Armageddon if I hadn't heard the love theme from Armageddon
yeah.
by Aerosmith in the closing credits of that movie. Okay, so I went to see I Think I Love My Wife.
Okay.
Chris Rock wrote this movie. Louis C.K. co-wrote it. Chris Rock directed and starred in it.
Mm-hmm.
It is a love story.
Okay.
Basically what this movie is, here's a summary of the movie. Chris Rock is married to the black lady from Serenity,
mm-hmm.
who's a really, really like charming.
Gina Torres.
There you go. And he works as an investment banker
mm-hmm.
in Manhattan with
yeah.
Steve Buscemi.
Oh, and I didn't know Steve Buscemi was his friend.
Yeah, his friend is Steve Buscemi, and his boss is the dad from the Gilmore Girls, who's also, I love that guy. I mean, the grandpa, he's got like a bow tie on, and he's just kind of being, you know, waspy.
Sure.
That's all he does, but he does a great job of it.
Wasps around.
Exactly. So he works in this investment firm, has a happy life. An old college friend, or actually the ex-girlfriend of an old college friend, re-enters his life, kind of hits on him, kind of plays with him romantically. And sort of the premise of this film is he going to cheat on his wife with this woman?
Mm-hmm.
It's very funny. I loved it.
Hmm.
It was somewhat slight. It's not a heavy movie at all. It's not much of a make you thinker, but it does deal with serious issues. And God bless Chris Rock.
Dude issues, right?
Yeah, and they're guy issues, which is really great, because when was the last movie that dealt with guy issues? Now, I'll grant you, the reason is because guys don't want to have anything to do with issues.
No.
They just want to watch Batman or whatever.
Yeah.
But a lot of guy issues in here that were like really treated respectfully. Like Chris Rock wasn't treated like a jerk when he, you know, was checking out checks or whatever. Like, and he, but at the same time, he kind of knew that he was doing something wrong by doing that. You know what I mean?
Right.
And and there was also like racial issues were dealt with in the film, but it wasn't like a movie about race, which made me think that like,
Chris Rock didn't teach anyone to dance, for
instance. Exactly. But it's kind of amazing. You don't realize, you don't think of the fact that when you go, how rarely you see a movie that deals with race that isn't about race. And when it is about race, it's usually like Remember the Titans or something like that, where Denzel teaches white people to love blacks because they're good at sports.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's what that movie was about. I didn't see it, but... you know, there are big movies that are about capital R race. There are Crash type movies where it's obviously like an Oscar ploy. We're going to deal with race
mm-hmm.
in this movie. This movie had race as a sort of a leitmotif, but it was hardly the theme of the film. I thought that was pretty fantastic. There's something for it. Chris Rock, not that bad at acting in this movie.
He's usually bad at acting.
He's usually just, and I should say here, just in case Chris Rock is listening.
Mm-hmm. He might be.
He could be. Who knows? Chris Rock is a spectacular comedian. In fact, I feel, and this is my personal opinion, that he is the greatest comedian of our time.
Okay.
I think that of this generation, of the generation of comedians, post-comedy boom, post-80s comedy boom, Chris Rock is head and shoulders above the rest. So I love Chris Rock, but he's a horrible actor. He's so bad at acting.
He'll just ruin a movie by being in it.
He can't even convincingly just do the thing that he does.
Yeah, even if his job in the movie is just to Chris Rock around, like he can't
like,
even.
Yeah, he can't do that. Like, well, let's say take the movie Head of State, which Chris Rock also directed, and I watched in the movie theater.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Chris Rock is in this with Bernie Mac. Now, Bernie Mac can only do one thing. That's Bernie Mac around.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But every time he's on the screen, in this movie, Chris Rock runs for president as a straight-talking black guy.
Mm-hmm.
Every time Bernie Mac, who plays the ethically questionable vice presidential candidate, every time Bernie Mac is on the screen, everything lights up and goes wild. Every time Chris Rock is on the screen,
bananas, like, would you say?
He goes banane. And Chris Rock is just so horrible. But in I Think I Love My Wife, Chris Rock, I would go so far as to say solid.
You know, people. I haven't seen it. When with the reviews, the positive reviews I've read say, you know, it kind of reminds you of an early Woody Allen movie. Did you find that to be true?
Well, it isn't joke filled
mm-hmm.
like a Woody Allen movie is. Like, you know how especially the early Woody Allen movies were just vehicles for his jokes. Well, most of Woody Allen's movies, outside of the ones that aren't funny,
mm-hmm.
Are just vehicles for his jokes. Most of the funny things in Woody Allen movies are amazing witticisms that come out of the most witticism-filled mind in our lifetimes,
mm-hmm.
right? It's not full of witticisms. There are a few witticisms in it, but, you know, it's not witticism full.
Gotcha.
It does have some kind of jokey situations. There's sort of
like when Chris Rock is putting together some pipes and his nosy neighbor is listening at the door and thinks he's having sex.
Yes, exactly. That is actually one of the scenes from the movie.
It won't fit in there. It's getting all over.
Exactly. Oh, it's so wet.
Yeah.
You're getting the kitchen wet.
Stick that pipe in there, okay?
There is actually a scene, which as I understand it is in the trailer, where Chris Rock takes a Viagra in an effort to... One of the central sort of problems of the movie is that as Chris Rock has sort of grown comfortable in his relationship with his wife, they've completely stopped having sex.
Mm-hmm.
And Steve Buscemi recommends that Chris Rock go home, like take his wife to a romantic dinner and take her to a chick movie and get a babysitter and then come home and take a Viagra.
Yeah.
So he does all these things and it goes really wonderfully and you're just sure that they're going to sleep together. And then he goes and checks on the kids and makes sure they're asleep. And when he comes back, she's conked out.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's already taken this Viagra and there's some kind of boner hijinks.
Mm. Bone jinx.
Yeah,
bone. They call him the ancient.
Bone jinx. But
it's a BOCO, as they say in the industry.
Even the boner hijinks, relatively muted and fit with the tone of the film and don't feel wildly out of character. They're not there just for the sake of the joke. They're not just there for the sake of outrageousness. So I give Hollywood 12 stars for finally letting a black person make just like a regular movie that he wanted to make that mm-hmm. isn't either a broad comedy or a heavy-handed drama about how hard it is to live life in the hood.
Hey, I think they released two of those recently. There's the Chris Rock one and then that one about the swimming team, the black swim team.
Oh, yes.
Isn't that the same thing?
You mean Pride?
Pride.
Yeah, because in that movie, black people teach us about tolerance by taking up a surprising sport.
Right, same thing.
What's the guy from the 7-Up commercials called? Orlando something?
Orlando Jones.
Okay, Orlando Jones. I'd never seen Orlando Jones in a movie in my life, although I know he's been in a number of movies.
You've never seen The Time Machine?
No, I haven't. And I never saw Evolution. But I have seen the 7-Up commercials.
Mm-hmm.
Orlando Jones has a cameo in the Chris Rock movie, and he's great. He's hilarious.
Oh, good.
And what it drove home to me as I was watching it, it's a little scene. He plays Chris Rock's old college buddy, who's a little bit unhinged and had actually tried to commit suicide after the girl that comes to see Chris Rock left him. And what it drove home to me was like, oh, this is what it's like when a thoughtful, smart African-American comedian gets to make a movie and another African-American comedian gets to have a part in the movie where he gets to be funny but doesn't have to bug his eyes a lot. I was like, it was like a revelation. It was like, oh, they've decided in this movie to let black people be funny without bugging their eyes out. Because I guess I just thought that was what was funny about Orlando Jones was he was like, or, you know, every African-American comedy star from Martin Lawrence to Orlando Jones to Chris Tucker. It's like white people love it when they bug their eyes out, right? And whatever talents they may have are kind of buried underneath that. And I just may assume that about Orlando Jones. I was like, well, he's just the shitty Chris Tucker, you know? But he had this little part. It was very subtly played and hilarious. Just fantastic.
Good to hear. Good to hear that somebody can be on Mad TV and then go on to...
Was he on Mad TV?
He was, yeah. He was like one of the flagship cast members.
Well, if there's hope for Orlando Jones, there's hope for our man Andy Daly.
Yeah.
Cross your fingers, America.
I saw a movie, too.
What was your movie, Jordan?
On Monday, I saw the movie Grindhouse.
Oh, this is the Robert Rodriguez, Quentin Tarantino anthology film?
Dub Feech,
I see.
I saw it early. I used my show business. I worked at the premiere of it. And if you listen to this podcast, you've probably heard me talking about these kind of wacky goofs I do at movie premieres as part of my job.
Wild leg pulls.
Hmm?
Wild leg pulls.
Yeah. Well, right. I'm pulling people's legs. Yes.
Silly hijinks.
Mm-hmm. Hijinks, shenanigans, that kind of thing.
Shenanigans.
That's shenanigans.
Okay. I mean, I figured it out a few seconds later, but it's creeped me out at first.
Sorry, I said shenanigans.
Ooh, stop talking about that.
Okay. Anyway, so, you know, I do these goofs on the red carpet. And by the way, I got to goof Kurt Russell, which was really fun. Actually, I kind of turned out I was the one who got goofed.
Wait a minute. By Kurt Russell?
Yeah, I was really excited to talk to Kurt Russell. First of all, I really, really like him. I think he's great. And I think he has kind of – it seems like he's made this career being really good in kind of these – C-plus movies. Like, he'll give an A-plus performance in a C-plus movie, kind of.
Except for Captain Ron. Well, that's a solid A.
Naturally. Actually, if anybody knows of like a legitimately good Kurt Russell movie, please call in with it, because I would sure like to see it.
So you admire Kurt Russell.
Yeah, he's great. I really like him, and I was really excited when his publicist asked if we wanted to talk to him, and I said, yes, absolutely. So he came up, and he shook my hand, and he's like, how you doing? And I said, and he was, I wish I could, if there was some way for me to convey his posture on the air, because his posture said, I'm ready to party. He was like kind of shaking. Like,
was it kind of like the dude in the Big Lebowski? That's how
no,
I'm imagining
that's
it.
That's like shambling. He wasn't okay. He was legitimately there to party, photographed.
Let me ask you this, Jordan.
To shoot people the finger gun. What?
Would you describe his demeanor as Captain Ron-esque?
No, less salty. That's again, not apt. That's,
okay,
he wasn't
sorry.
Salty. He was...
Captain Ron just at the beginning of Captain Ron when he seems like such a fun guy?
Okay, sure. Captain Ron-esque. Okay. Anyway, so he comes
As you
up.
Might guess, I'm pretty sure the only Kurt Russell movie I've seen is Captain Ron.
So you need to see Dark Blue, my friend.
Okay, gotcha. Duly noted.
So anyways, he's like, how you doing? And I shook his hand and I said, I'm great. And he said, no, you're not. You're a dork. Man, it was so funny. I couldn't even believe it. Like, I didn't have to do... I feel like, that's it. We got our piece. Thank you, Kurt Russell. Like, he didn't, like... And I don't think he had ever... I mean, I don't imagine he's ever seen one of the things I've done.
No.
You know.
Maybe he watches Fuel.
I don't know if
to catch
Kurt Russell,
up on wakeboarding?
Yeah, if he watches New Pollution or... But, yeah, I mean, he just called me a dork. I guess he's just kind of a bully in real life.
Was he being mean?
I was being aggressive. I mean, you know, like...
He was being... Did he give you a nuggie?
I mean, okay, I don't know if you've read The Game, Jesse.
I've read The Game.
Clearly amogging.
So The Game is the nonfiction memoir about author Neil Strauss's descent into the crazy world of of
the pickup artist.
The pickup artist. And say what amogging is.
Amogging, amog stands for alpha male of group. And that's where you kind of, you go into a bar, or you go into a club, and you're kind of make a conscious decision to be the most like boisterous, you know, funny center of attention person there. I think in the book, Tom Cruise is presented as the ultimate amog.
Because he can amog in any situation. Amog being a verb.
Yeah.
He can amog in any situation.
Anyway, so that's
you got amogged.
I got amogged by Kurt Russell, and it was a real thrill. Anyways, and actually for the first time in the, you know, year or so that I've been doing this, I've never got to watch one of the movies in advance. That's just not part of the deal.
Or even at the premiere. Like, I assumed when I found out that you did this, I assumed that you went, you did the red carpet, and then
and
you watched the movie.
And you watched the movie.
It being the premiere of the movie, and that being...
No, the press is not invited. Maybe your Entertainment Tonight's, your Access Hollywood's get to go in, but, you know, your smaller cable outlets...
Unfortunately
don't.
For you, Fuse goes in.
Yeah,
Fuel
Fuse
doesn't
does.
Get in.
G4.
They'll let in the people from Pants Off, Dance Off.
Yeah.
But they will not let in the people from The Daily Habit, unfortunately.
So we got to go in, which was a real thrill. It was downtown in the Orpheum Theater, which was really beautiful. I had never been to before. So I watched the movie Grindhouse. Holy cow, I could not, you can't even believe that you're watching it. Like the stuff that's on, like you're like, is this a movie I'm watching? And I mean that in a really good way. I mean that in a really.
Is this a movie I'm watching, or am I living a nightmare? Or
No, I mean, is it just like, it's the ultimate example of these guys just did whatever they wanted. And I think that is kind of jarring, because I feel like, I mean, if you're like a kind of a pop culture savvy person and you watch a movie and you can kind of tell, you know, you can kind of sense some concessions that people made. You're like, oh, well, they added this because of this. Or, you know, this love story, you know, in, you know, Click or whatever is, you know, is there because of, you know, some market research or something like that.
It just shows.
I've never seen Click, but.
You're
going to
go ahead and presume that there might be a love story in an Adam Sandler comedy film.
Yeah. But this is just like this, you know, like these guys can do whatever they want to, and they did. They really did.
So what did they do?
Whatever they wanted to. They just made a crazy movie. And I've read a couple of reviews that have said contrary, but I'm going to say ahead and say that the Robert Rodriguez movie Planet Terror is the superior of the two films. It's a zombie movie. It's kind of a straight-up zombie movie.
You just love zombie movies.
I do. And granted, I am really partial to anything with zombies, but I feel like I'm discerning. Like, I feel like I don't just automatically like something that has zombies. But when something has zombies and it's awesome, all the better, I say.
What was something that was in these movies that you thought was the ultimate example of the fact that Robert Rodriguez and Quentin Tarantino were just doing whatever the heck they wanted?
Let's see. The presence of Tom Savini.
I don't know who that is.
Tom Savini is this guy who did all the special effects for the Living Dead movies, and kind of pops up in these in kind of B horror movies a lot. I think he plays like kind of this crazy biker in Dawn of the Dead. You know, he kind of plays these bizarre. He pops up in the kind of these weird roles. Like he was in there. You know, there's just a lot of, you know, this kind of bizarre sexuality, this kind of bizarre, you know, and it's just violent. Okay, well, here's the best way to describe it, I think. I think on all the posters of this movie, you've seen Rose McGowan with a gun for a leg. That's kind of the image of the movie.
Yeah.
As Rose McGowan with a machine gun on a leg. She gets the machine gun leg about three quarters of the way through the movie. And when that happens, it seems totally reasonable. It doesn't seem crazy. It's just like, you know, in the world of the movie, people have machine gun legs that you're not sure how they fire. Like, just because the rest is so bizarre.
Well, I imagine they have to do a lot of stretching and yoga in order to effectively fire the machine gun leg.
It's kind of you don't fire it with your hands. It just kind of fires when you leap up in the air.
Well, I was thinking, just in order, is the business end what would be the foot?
Yes. Yes.
Well, I'm imagining somebody with one, their left, which leg is it? Left leg or right leg?
I feel like it's right leg. I could be wrong.
I'm imagining a left foot planted and then lifting a right leg at a right angle to one's body because of the yoga you've done. Mm-hmm. So I can't do that personally, particularly.
You don't fire it with your hands. No, the trigger isn't pulled. The gun
you don't
fires.
Have to pull, but what I'm saying is in order to balance it there, you'd have to do a lot of downward dogs and what have you.
Yes. Well, she's a stripper in the movie.
Okay. So she can do a lot of kicks.
Yeah.
She already knows about it. But she probably got to be a stripper through yoga.
Oh, also the gun fires missiles.
Oh, okay.
Sometimes.
Is there a missile storage area?
Or? Hard to say. It doesn't. I'm just saying when that comes up in the movie, you're just with it. You know, you're just like, this is happening, and I'm fine with it.
It sounds like this movie was primarily concerned with the same sort of domestic themes as I Think I Love My Wife.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of identity.
What happens when you have kids? How does your life change when you have kids?
Exactly.
Is paralleled in Grindhouse by what happens when your leg is replaced by a machine gun that shoots missiles.
Yeah. And you're a stripper also. Then there's the Quentin Tarantino movie, which is, and then there's some really funny previews in between and they're great. So the Quentin Tarantino movie is called Death Proof, and Kurt Russell is in it. He's the heavy. He's the horror movie heavy in it. I think I'm using that term right. I'm sure someone will
I have no idea what
me.
That means. I don't think that's real.
It is. It's something. Kurt Russell is in it, and he is so amazing. If you saw the Kill Bill movies, and remember how amazing David Carradine is in Kill Bill.
When he's making that sandwich?
He makes this great sandwich. He talks about Superman.
Man.
He's fantastic.
Yeah. And then in real life, he thought he was a movie star after that.
Yeah, and then he wasn't. And then nope. he made some Geico commercials. Anyways, it was
poor
really
guy.
Sad. But yeah. Anyway, yeah, I guess everyone after, John Travolta became a movie star again after Pulp Fiction, and that really didn't happen for anybody else who was in a Quentin Tarantino movie. Sorry, David Carradine. You deserved it. You totally deserved it.
No, he didn't. I heard him on the radio. That's how I know he thought he was a movie star, is because I heard him on the radio, and he was a real dick. he was being like John Travolta without the sense of humor.
Ah, that's a shame.
It was awful.
That's a shame.
Anyway.
Anyways, so Kurt Russell is fantastic. He's so funny and so compelling, and you just you love it. And then Kurt Russell leaves the film for half hour, 45 minutes, and it's awful. And it just seems like a parody of a Quentin Tarantino movie. It looks like it's like a Channel 101 parody of a Quentin Tarantino movie. It feels that comic. And it's like you have this ridiculous dialogue, right, that Quentin Tarantino writes. And if David Carradine is saying it, who's another Tarantino actor? Your Robert De Niro's or your Sam Jackson's are saying these things.
Pam Grier.
That might not be a great example.
Okay.
Anyways, but
Pam Grier is pretty cool though.
Pam Grier's great.
I really like Pam Grier.
Maybe audience revisit the movie Jawbreaker. She's great in that. She's
there
this cop, and I think Rose McGowan is in that as well. Anyways, Jawbreaker's good.
So, guys, if you're keeping track at home, Jawbreaker and Deep Blue?
Dark Blue. But you can see Deep Blue Sea, audience. If you want to rent Deep Blue Sea is cool. You'll raise the roof for LL when he stabs a shark in the eye with his crucifix.
Anyway.
And he has a talking parrot.
You don't see a lot of non-talking parrots in movies these days.
What do you think, thoughtful parrot? Parrot just, yeah, just, anyway, so.
Just pecks at his seed bell.
Yeah, just pecks at his seed bell. Maybe goes upside down. what was I talking about?
It's
Quentin Tarantino has ridiculous dialogue, and then maybe it's because he's become crazy, which is, I think, an option, or just these actresses he has. One of them is Rosario Dawson, and I love Rosario Dawson.
You're a fan.
Jesse. She touched me on the shoulder once, and I can still kind of feel it.
Uh-huh.
It was great. It was wonderful. I think she's beautiful, and I think hopefully she'll be in a great movie someday. But this, it didn't work. It's weird.
Possible. You know, there's always hope. Mm-hmm. Like Jennifer Lopez was in Out of Sight.
She was. She was absolutely in
Out of
Sight.
And she was great in it.
Yeah, totally great. And then wasn't great in anything
else. She's never been great
again.
Was she?
I don't know.
I don't think so.
Anyways.
She's a bad actress.
So yeah, I have full confidence that Rosario Dawson can be compelling in something. And this just totally isn't it. And it's weird. And you don't get it. And you don't understand why it's happening. Then Kurt Russell comes back. And after I spent 45 minutes kind of hating the movie, Kurt Russell comes back. By the end, I'm applauding. And I know you said earlier that you hate applause and you think it's just kind of this weird showboating that people do. I mean, especially in LA, I know that when people clap for something, it's usually totally disingenuous and dumb. I felt like I was legitimately applauding this movie. Because I just loved it so much. The end of this movie is so fantastic, especially the kind of the final 4 seconds of the movie are really tremendous. Just where the movie ends is amazing, and yeah, it's fantastic, and it's such a weird experience, and I've kind of been thinking about this before. I mean, we talk about the new sincerity on this show sometimes, and it got me thinking about Robert Rodriguez and Quentin Tarantino as, you know, kind of these problematic satellites around the new sincerity. And it's hard to say where they fit into it. And you kind of wonder, you know, how cute they think they are. I mean, I know they think they're cute, but it's all in the service of being awesome. Like, that is the number one goal of these things.
They may have some mistaken ideas about what is awesome.
Perhaps that's it.
I mean, to Quentin Tarantino, and I heard Quentin Tarantino the other day on talking with Elvis Mitchell on the National Public Radio program, The Treatment.
Mm-hmm.
And he was really sweet. I mean, I just really, my heart went out to him.
And he talked to me at the premiere and was really sweet. Joked around, put his arm around me. Great. I, you know, thumbs up. Real nice.
Really, really heartfelt guy and really passionate about what he does. And mm-hmm. I can really respect that, you know? And funny and an excellent filmmaker. But, you know, to Quentin Tarantino's idea of the greatest thing ever is to, like, watch Gymkhana.
I don't know about that. Well, okay. Maybe.
Yeah, it is. This whole thing is like a tribute to the exploitation film.
Yeah.
Which is not something that I support.
Yeah. Well, ultimately. I think the theory about his idea isn't laughing at the bad parts of these movies.
I know.
It's celebrating the things about them that are good.
So that's the issue. Whether that's allowed, I'm not sure.
Mm-hmm.
Whether you can, he has the right attitude, I'll grant you that. Because
mm-hmm.
he's not an ironist.
No.
He's not laughing at what's bad. On the other hand, these movies that he loves so much tend to be pretty awful.
Okay. Well, here's the thing, though. Here's what I think. Okay, never mind. I think the point I was about to make is just we'll just leave.
Here's
this in the circle.
Thing. Okay, but maybe what I can give him credit for,
mm-hmm.
and Rodriguez by extension, is that they are just so passionate that the one great thing in something that's otherwise awful is enough for them.
Yeah.
Like they
they'll
can,
overlook the bad okay the bad acting and the bad editing
filmmaking,
and directing yeah
the bad movie
mm-hmm.
for one moment one badass line delivered in a badass way or one really great shot or one great move one mm-hmm. like karate move or something like that, and that's something to be admired, I think.
Yeah,
although I wouldn't choose to have wasted my life looking for those things.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Fair enough.
As I think we can all agree Quentin Tarantino has. Although I do envy the fact that Quentin Tarantino has a record room in his house.
Does he?
That was like what he built when he got rich.
Hmm.
He built a room just for his records and music.
Also loves American Idol.
Does he really?
Yeah, I've heard that.
Oh, that sucks. I hate American Idol.
Yeah.
My aunt started talking to me about American Idol when I went to visit my grandma.
You just razzed her? You just gave her the raspberry?
I didn't razz her because my aunt is just the nicest woman. just the nicest, just a really good lady. Mm-hmm. And she knew that it was embarrassing to like American Idol, but she brought it up just because she thought, well, here's something that anyone can talk about.
Right. This is a thing people talk about.
I just don't want to even think about it. I don't even want it to cross my plane of, you know, mind sight. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I just don't want anything to do with it. And it's fine that other people like it. I think they're making a mistake, but it's okay that they like it.
Yeah, it's not innately bad.
But
it's not rotten at its core.
I live a life that almost completely excludes it.
Right.
And I don't want anybody to bring it in.
Oh, I'm sorry, you know? I brought it up then.
My girlfriend's,
I apologize.
One time my girlfriend's cousin was on that show.
Oh, yeah?
And I tried to watch it like sincerely. Like I complained a lot first.
Yeah.
But then I tried to watch it.
Maybe it would be more fun if you had somebody to root for specifically.
Yeah, somebody to root for. And, you know, like
Is your sister's cousin Fantasia?
My girlfriend's cousin, Jordan.
Girlfriend's cousin.
I have no sisters.
And you guess you would have the same cousins.
My girlfriend's cousin. No, my girlfriend's cousin didn't make it too far, but I just couldn't do it. I hate it. Okay. Isn't that a nice note to end on in this segment?
Well, did we come to a conclusion as to whether or not? I mean, maybe we can open it up for discussion.
I think we're going to open it up for discussion. I think this is going to be something that's going to stoke some fires on the Sound of Young America Maximum Fun Forum.
Here's hoping.
Okay. We'll be back in just a second on Jordan, Jesse, Go. La, 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 la. Jordan, Jesse, Go. I'm Jesse Thorne, America's radio sweetheart.
Jordan Morris, boy detective.
We're having good times, laughing, sharing stories, remembering the best things, the best years of our lives.
Yeah, just a typical JJG podcast.
You know, Jordan, I'm going to prick your balloon.
Oh, boy.
Last week on this program, we were discussing sliming, any television program. You can't do that on television. I asserted I posited that perhaps you can't do that on television was the one with the host who I later watched on while I was flying on JetBlue, host a show about how food is made on the Food Network.
Okay.
You agreed. I said, is that the one with the sliming? Yes, you said. That's the one with the sliming. I'm putting this whole thing squarely on you, Jordan.
What? This
segment
ridiculous.
Is called Corrections of Things That Jordan Has Said.
Oh.
You heard it last week with Bartleby the Scrivener.
Sure.
This week, it has to do with a little show, maybe you've heard of it, called Double Dare.
Hey, Jordan, Jesse, Go. You probably already know this, but I was listening to the podcast. And you talked about you can't do that on television and how the host is now on the Food Network. Well, I think you're thinking of Double Dare, where people do get slimed, and the host of that was Mark Summers, who went on to do shows about how candy is made on the Food Network. So just want to correct that. Thanks a lot. Bye.
Boom.
Hey, I guess, but technically you brought it up. I just said I thought you were
just to
right.
be. But Jordan, what is the segment called?
Oh, right, Jordan gets something wrong.
Yeah, exactly.
Well,
so sorry,
you've got me there. Those are ironclad facts.
I mean, that's how it's been defined. Right? I didn't define it.
No.
Well, technically, I did
you
define
did.
It, but
everything you're saying is a lie.
That's true. Granted, did I tell you about how I was listening to Talk of the Nation and David Mamet was on it? And David Mamet was some woman called in to question something that David Mamet had, some ridiculous assertion that David Mamet had made about the movie business. He was talking about his movie business book. And he says, well, Sarah, I think that's rather sophistic of you. And I honor you for that. But ... I just love the idea that in David Mamet's world, being sophistic is like the ultimate value you can have. Like in David Mamet's idea of like what makes a good person, it's can convince someone of something that's not necessarily true. Like in David Mamet's world, the sole value is rhetoric.
He's made that very clear he has in his body of work.
He has no other interest besides rhetoric. Yeah, I mean, it's true. Like, Oleana, which is the one where it's the man sort of...
A man hits a woman with a chair?
Yeah, exactly. Well, it's a sort of a question of sexual harassment and what is and isn't sexual harassment, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. In that one, it literally is just completely about rhetoric. Rhetoric and a contempt for women. Those are David Mamet's two core values.
Love of Judaism.
Yes, love of Judaism. Three. Three core values are a rhetoric.
Oh, there's
contempt
four.
For women.
There's a rhetoric, contempt for women, Judaism, hatred of actors. Hates actors.
Okay, that's a topic for that's a topic we're definitely going to talk about next week is David Mamet's book about acting. We're going to forget that we said that we were going to talk about it. We forget almost everything.
Please send
that we
another
we're gonna
correction
do.
About how I was wrong when we didn't talk about David Mamet.
We'll
should we have a prize for people who catch my flubs?
Yes, they get the approbation of a thankful public.
Cool. Does that come in the mail?
It comes in their hearts.
Oh.
And on their faces.
Oh, gross, man. I didn't know we were going to.
Sorry, I didn't even.
Fair enough.
We'll be back in just a second on Jordan, Jesse, Go.
La, la, la.
This is Jordan, Jesse, Go. I'm Jesse Thorne, America's radio sweetheart.
And I'm Jordan Morris, boy detective.
Did you know that our sponsor on this program is Project Breakout, the Internet Comedy Talent Contest? There's already been all of the submissions to the website, projectbreakout.com.
Yes.
There,
some of them very funny, by the way. I was looking around that Project Breakout. There's some great... If you're just looking to screw around on the internet at work, it's a good place to go.
Here's what I ask of you, though.
What?
Get on that website at projectbreakout.com and vote for the good ones.
Yes.
Because you can vote a lot,
mm-hmm.
and so there are a few very bad ones near the top of the list. And I don't want to have to go in the end contest where it's me and Ann Beats and Biz from Sketchfest NYC judging these. I don't want to have to say too many awful things about these, but there's one in particular with a woman... She's wearing a Viking hat, and she's just talking crazy, just crazy talk. A young woman, I don't know, maybe our age, 25. Maybe she's a little older, maybe a little younger.
Hard to say. I don't know which one you're talking
about. She's talking crazy talk, and then she's also saying, like, fo shizzle my nizzle. Not an African-American woman, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
I guess maybe it could be interpreted somehow as comedy. But it would really be a stretch.
It sounds like it's mainly just things happening.
It's not like, I'm just not even really sure what about it is supposed to be funny. But she's conducted a very excellent outreach effort.
Oh.
And so she's in the top 10. She's squarely in the top 10, in
fact.
I'm
totally going to watch that when I get home now.
Yeah, just go to the projectbreakout.com and look for the picture of a woman wearing a Viking hat.
Yeah.
Just, Jordan, all I ask of the people out there, just vote for the good ones. I met a young man named Kent,
mm-hmm.
who had created a video in which he was reminiscing on his days as in an a cappella singing group, fictional a cappella singing group, as a former star of the a cappella singing world that I thought was quite funny. He came up to me the other day on the street. He said, "Hey, you're Jesse Thorne from Jordan, Jesse, Go and Sound of Young America." And I was like, "Yeah." And he's like, "Oh, I entered the Project Breakout. I made the a cappella singing video and I watched it and I thought it was really funny."
Yeah, there's also a good one where these guys teach you how to do everything through flamenco guitar.
Yeah, that is a funny one. I watched that one as well. There's a lot of really funny stuff on there.
Yeah,
so
Troop,
for God's sake,
the sketch group Troop has some solid ones.
They uploaded some really great stuff. Casper Hauser uploaded something, and mm-hmm. you even uploaded something.
I uploaded a little something. We've been talking.
Does
about
it have any votes yet?
I don't know. I haven't checked really.
I think you got to just sit there and do more voting.
Oh, yeah, I should vote for myself.
So all I'm saying is, if you're out there and you care about us, and you care particularly about me mm-hmm. and these videos that I'm going to have to judge. For God's sake, go on Project Breakout and vote for the good ones, because some of the bad ones have their friends and family voting right now.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's not a good scene. Not a good scene.
No. Projectbreakout.com. It's really fun. I was surprised by how legitimately fun it was. I had a job for a while where looking at internet videos was a huge part of my job, and it got so trying, and I really began to hate the aesthetic of the internet video, just the little ticker at the bottom that shows how long it was going and just the content and their titles. There's this one video. This was my breaking point when I watched a video called Cat Takes It in the Jewels. Here was the content of this video. It was a cat jumping over a fence and like his back leg kind of gets caught on the fence. Like that was all it was. It was so mild and slight, but it had this horrible, aggressive title. Like the guy who posted the video hated the cat and thought it was getting its just desserts. Cat, it had just such, you could hear the disdain and like the 13-year-old boy mockery in the title. Cat Takes It in the Jewels. Anyways, during this job, I began to hate the internet video, and I'm like, I'm not sure I want to watch the Project Breakout videos, but they're really fun, and I like them.
ProjectBreakout.com. They're our sponsor. Help them help us. This is Jordan Jesse Go. I am Jesse Thorne, America's radio sweetheart.
And I'm Jordan Morris, boy detective.
You know, a couple weeks ago, we were celebrating the launch of the This American Life television program on the Showtime Network.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you've heard of it. Your host, one Mr. Ira Glass. Did I tell you about the email that I got from the listener in New York City who sent me an email, and she said that the real America's
yes,
radio sweetheart
that is Ira Glass.
Is Ira Glass. She's right.
Yeah,
right,
absolutely.
I agree. I love Ira Glass. I met him at a party recently.
Yeah, how'd that go?
He was gayer in person.
Interesting. He's because he's a little gay on the radio.
He's a little gay on the radio, but I mean, he was a little. He had had a couple drinks, so I think you know he was just loosey goosey.
Okay,
but
there's a difference between.
But you know what he
anyway.
Was like?
What?
Like just like you'd imagine, he was so nice to me.
Cool.
He had no reason to be nice to me. Who the fuck am I? He was totally nice to me. Anyway, let's get off.
You have a lot of buying power.
Yeah, I do have a lot of buying power. My $13K a year.
Mm-hmm.
When you're pulling in $13K a year, people are always looking to you for major donations, that kind of thing. I could be the next Gene Kroc donating my McDonald's fortune to National Public Radio.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Only in this case, in Gene Kroc's case, the McDonald's fortune was the fortune that she had inherited from her late husband who founded McDonald's.
Mm-hmm.
In my case, it would be my fortune, which is enough to get some McDonald's.
Also, Ken Jennings gave a bunch of money to NPR.
Did Ken Jennings really give a bunch of money to NPR?
To the Mormon Church and to NPR is where
celebrity,
he gave most of his money.
Celebrity Jeopardy contestant, mm-hmm. Ken Jennings, right?
Yeah. That was cool how for a while there was a celebrity Jeopardy contestant. Like, isn't that kind of neat?
It's a nice kind of celebrity,
I think. Like, he got famous for being there.
And you know what? I liked the other part about him, which was that he was really he really worked hard to be decent.
Yeah.
You know, like, that was one of his priorities, to be like
there wasn't a lot of showboating.
No, there was no showboating. Like, he just, you know, he loved his trivia or whatever.
He didn't buy a Cadillac and then intentionally crash it.
I mean, as sad as it is that he was a World Jeopardy champion 50 times in a row, like, that's like a really kind of sad life to lead, in my opinion.
No,
he didn't seem
sad at all. He just seemed like a guy who knew a lot of stuff. He didn't seem like he was like a hermit.
No, he was like a hermit.
Was he?
That's how he became the champion.
Huh.
He'd like trained like a hermit.
Interesting. I didn't know that. I thought he was just kind of naturally, you know.
No.
Quizzy.
Well, I mean, I'm not going to dispute with you that he was naturally quixotic.
Yeah.
Not to be confused with quixotic. Anyway, in honor of the launch of the This American Life television program, we had this American Life television program poster, size of a big movie poster, autographed by Ira Glass, to give away. We asked people to call in and tell us stories about their debut, since the This American Life TV show was debuted about a week and a half ago.
Sure.
We picked the top three, in our opinion. We got a lot of entries, a lot of stories about people losing their voice on stage.
Yeah, that's a popular one.
A lot of stories about...
A lot of poop in the pants.
A lot of poop in the pants. A lot of middle schoolers.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's very... There are a lot of middle schoolers. Middle school, very emotional time.
Yeah.
Before we do number three, I want to take this opportunity to acknowledge two honorable mention entries.
Yes.
Number one, Aaron from Canada. Aaron from Canada sent in a video of him dancing like Michael Jackson on the table at his high school.
During lunchtime.
During lunchtime. It was not the best debut story, probably.
A very good debut story.
But it was a very good debut story.
And had an accompanying video.
And it had an accompanying video. And it was, he was doing something really, and I just feel like I need to acknowledge him for doing that. Mm-hmm. Not so much for the story about doing that, which is where the whole thing was a little shaky.
Sure.
But for having done that, thumbs up.
Absolutely.
Also, we had a listener named Dan. Dan sent in a story that was a pretty good story that he had produced, like a This American Life story.
Yeah, it had kind of the cadence and the rhythm of a This American Life. It had interstitial music that got softer when he talked.
Yeah, it was about him, and it was about him in a junior government organization being signed up to become a freestyle rapper when he had never rapped before.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, I'm going to post that one up for download on the blog post for this week's show. So mm-hmm. if you're interested in hearing that, you can do it there. Now, let's get to the number three. Drum roll, please.
Hey, Jordan and Jesse. My name is Becca. I'm calling from New York City with the story of my collegiate soccer debut. So I never really had played soccer before. I was from a tiny town in Illinois where no one really played soccer. And I ended up going to a small college in Ohio where prior experience did not really matter much as far as athletics go. Anyway, I got roped into playing on the college soccer team, and I guess because I had played basketball before and was kind of athletic, they thought I could catch stuff out of the air, so they made me the goalie. So they didn't really tell me any of the rules of the game or anything. They just told me to stay in the goal and block the shot. So it goes okay, and I'm pretty good at it in the preseason. And the first game comes along, and the other team gets awarded a penalty kick. I didn't really realize at the time what a big deal those were, but I ended up saving the penalty kick, which was awesome. Everyone kind of went nuts, and it was really exciting. But I just kind of assumed for some reason, I'm not sure why, that after a penalty kick, the ball goes to the referee at midfield for a kickoff thing or whatever. So I save this penalty kick, and everyone's going crazy. It's this awesome moment. And I just take the ball and kind of gently roll it back out there, thinking that someone will send it to the referee at midfield. And the girl that kicked the penalty shot just kind of stares at me for a sec and stops the ball and just real lightly kicks it right past me, and I don't even, like, try to attempt to save it. And I look at her, and I said, dude, what are you doing? But I don't think she noticed because they were cheering because they just scored a goal. And I asked the referee if we could maybe have a do-over since I didn't know the rule, but he said no, and we lost, and that sort of sucked.
Okay. Let's talk about this one for a second here. Some things I like about it. Number one. She must have played an entire season with this intercollegiate soccer team. To be clear, this wasn't an intramural team.
No.
This was a team where you played against other colleges, at least as far as I can tell, right?
Okay.
She, when explaining this horrible mistake she made on the field, she says, I guess I just assumed that you had to send it back to midfield for the, you know, whatever, kickoff type thing.
Yeah.
She still doesn't know. She still has no ideas what the rules of soccer are. She was in goal for this team for an entire season, and she still thinks that that's called the kickoff type thing.
I automatically have a soft spot for people who don't understand the rules of sports, as someone who doesn't understand the rules of sports.
Are there any rules? What sports do you not understand the rules of? Football?
Sure.
Oh, do you know? You do understand the rules?
Not really.
Do you know how many downs there are?
I have four downs. There's four downs.
What do you have to do in the four downs?
You have to travel a certain distance with the ball.
Right.
Okay.
What's the difference between what's a forward pass and what's a handoff?
You know okay. That? Okay. Something that the quarterback does.
Right.
Forward pass. What's a lateral pass? That's something else.
Yeah, that is something else.
Okay. I don't know. That's just when you throw the ball and then hand off. You hand it off to the running back who runs a certain distance.
Who does the quarterback throw it to?
Oh, Bo Jackson.
Well, more typically, he would hand it off to Bo Jackson. But yeah, I think you're right. For most clubs,
yeah,
he's going to be throwing it to. To Bo Jackson, and what I like also about this story is that she sounds like she's at peace with this horrible mistake that she made.
Yeah, no, I mean she sounds I have a real picture in my head of on what kind of person she is, and I kind of like that person. I'm glad that person isn't, you know, phased or stressed out. I think she's just kind of happy to be doing an activity in the sun, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
I didn't mean to imply she was a shut-in. That wasn't what I was getting at.
Why do you think she was a shut-in?
I don't think she... I was just saying she likes doing...
Do you think
doing...
they put her in goal because she's too big and she can't get out of her door?
No, that's not... That
do you
doesn't
think
make
they
sense.
Hoist her out of her... Like her...
This isn't about hoisting... I was just saying she sounds like a person who
well,
takes
pleasure.
Well,
you're the one
pleasure.
Who brought up hoisting,
I'm saying
Jordan.
She takes pleasure in the simple things. A good outdoor activity, punch...
Yeah, whatever.
A glass of punch.
Whatever, Aaron Copeland.
Oh, wow.
Next subject.
Hi, Jordan Jesse. This is Will from Indiana with the debut story. It's not exactly my debut, but I was intimately involved, so here goes. It's the day of my high school graduation. I'm riding down the highway with my best friends, Tom and Mike, in Tom's convertible, top down, which sounds kind of dorky, but is actually pretty awesome when you're 18 and have just graduated from high school. Tom had been acting weird for a few weeks. Mike and I knew he had a new girlfriend, but he wouldn't tell us anything about her, including her name. All we knew is that his parents didn't know about her, and he'd spend hours every day on the phone with her. So after a few weeks of this, things come to a head as we're riding to the graduation. And Mike and I finally straight up demand that, as his friends, he's got to tell us about her, show us a picture or something. And he gets this look in his eye, and he says, "You want to see a picture of her? Fine." And he pulls out his wallet and tosses it into my lap. And I open it up, and there's a picture of Tom's new girl. Now what I say is, "Nice," and pass it back to Mike in the back seat. What I'm thinking is, whoa, Tom's new lady kind of looks like a guy. And then Mike looks at it, and apparently he doesn't use the same filters that I do, because he says, "Wow, she looks like a guy." And as I'm leaning back to hit him for this, I catch Tom's eye, and he's got this sort of mixture of pride and embarrassment going on. And I realize Tom's new girl looks like a guy because she is a guy. And I say, "What, really?" And he says, "Yeah." And then there's this long pause as I just assimilate the new information, and then, "That's cool." And we ride along quietly for a minute or two, kind of adjusting to the new situation, before Mike, in the back seat, goes, "What is it, guys? What are you guys being so quiet about?" And that was my friend Tom's debut.
I like that story.
Has a couple of buds riding around in a convertible.
Just some pals hanging out, having a good time, mm-hmm. taking a ride, but there's a curveball.
Yeah.
And then there's a punchline.
Yeah.
It's pithy.
Mm-hmm.
Remember we said
mainly,
it should be pithy.
That mainly wins for its length rather than its content.
Yeah, well, I don't know.
45 seconds?
I kind of
minute
like...
Minute and a half?
I'll give it points for being a story where the joke is about teenage gayness, but it's not at the expense of the teenage gay.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's actually the whole story is completely sympathetic to the teenage gay.
Sure.
You see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
I like that it's 45 seconds long.
Great.
Did we discuss that it was 45 seconds long?
I mentioned something.
It was pithy.
Mm-hmm.
It was delightful. 45 seconds long.
Sure.
He wrote it out. You could tell he wrote it out. He did a good job of reading it, but I'm pretty sure he wrote it out to keep it pithy.
Yes.
That's why. You got to get in, do your thing, get out. See what I'm saying? That's the secret of calling into Jordan Jesse Go. That's why he got second place in this contest. Now, I'll grant you.
It doesn't have a prize.
There's no prize for second place.
Yeah.
But God bless this young man.
Oh, I liked... What did I like about it? There were some things that I thought were funny. I can't...
You don't even remember?
I can't remember what it was.
I guess you didn't like it that much.
Yeah. I just tuned out, kind of. Just although, like the guy in the story.
Although, to be fair, Jordan...
Mm-hmm.
It was 45 seconds long, and you tend to tune out at anything longer than 40 seconds.
Huh? Bo Jackson, right?
Hey, Jordan. Hey, Jesse. This is Ryan from Chattanooga, Tennessee. I have a debut story for you. This is my stage debut. When I was around 14 or 15, I kind of thought of myself as a good actor. I thought I had the skill... So I decided I was going to audition for The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe at the Youth Theater in Chattanooga. And I was really stoked about the role, and I really wanted to play Edmund, who was the one of the brothers. The only problem was that I was really fat, and I guess, you know, I guess maybe other fat people or fat kids can relate to this. You don't really think of yourself as fat necessarily when you're a kid and you're fat. You think you can do things that maybe you can't do that the other kids could do, like play basketball really well, for example. I used to think I could do that too. But anyway, I auditioned for this play. I even used a British accent. and I really felt strong about my audition. I ended up getting a role, but I ended up getting the role of the dwarf, which was really, really depressing. But the worst part was that the kids that I was acting with in this play, I mean, it's bad enough that I had to play the dwarf when I wanted to play Edmund, but the kids were so mean to me. I remember one girl commenting, she said, "Look, he has bigger boobs than I do." And that was really harsh. That hit me pretty hard. And then I remember backstage one day, one kid was pressing on my shoulder, and he told everyone to come and try it because it felt just like Play-Doh. And that was really harsh, too. I stored that in my heart and brooded on it many a night. And but the worst part was that during the first dress rehearsal before the big debut of the play, I was backstage eating Turkish Delight, which was gumdrops, and I had a big mouthful, and then I heard everyone yelling because I had missed my cue, and I was supposed to be on stage, and my mouth was just full of gumdrops, and I rushed out, and everyone burst out laughing, and they, it was very obvious that, you know, here's the fat kid who's been stuffing face backstage, misses cue. It was a really depressing situation, but, anyway, that was my stage debut experience.
That's great for a lot of reasons. One, I like how in, you know, your youth theater, your high school theater, you know, like, for instance, he was the fat kid, so he played the dwarf. And I
so
like...
the suggestion that all sorts of physical infirmities or deformities are interchangeable?
Yes, that's amusing. But also, like, kind of in, it's like, okay, you're doing a high school play or you're doing a child's play, and already you're not appropriate to play the character. You know, just the fact that you being a child, apart from the child parts in the play, no one is appropriate for their role, right? But they still try to find ways to make, you know, like, well, the most old-looking kid has to play the old man, you know, like those kind of arbitrary things. It's like, come on, they're all children, just let them, you know, don't use physicality as an, you know, as a reason. And also I like that he was eating the props.
Mm-hmm.
That's funny. And you know, just great, just like a classic humiliation. That's like a classic, you know,
it's pure in a way.
Absolutely.
We should be clear, he was eating the props in The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, for those who haven't read it, or I guess maybe it was in the movie. I didn't see the movie that came out recently. They bring their eating Turkish delights. It's part of the play.
When the Lion, Witch, and the Wardrobe movie came out, I heard this guy from like the Christian Family Association on a radio show talking about like why he was glad it was so successful, and he thought that he said that. You know, this is the kind of film America wants to see, and his like case for it was that it made more money than Brokeback Mountain.
Oh,
I thought that was great. Like, there's no other reason apart from America's disdain for homosexuality that made more money.
Yeah.
Anyway,
can I tell you about why I chose this one and why I concurred with you?
Oh, why?
Obviously, you had very strong feelings about it.
Yeah,
this.
Great fatso story.
I agreed with you on this point because I actually had a secret criterion.
Oh.
Which I had.
Well, you can't have secret criteria. This is bullshit, Jesse.
I didn't have
We're
secret
co-hosts.
Criteria. I had a single secret criterion, which was any story involving Turkish Delight is in like Flynn.
Wow.
Anything. So if somebody else had called in with a Turkish Delight related story.
This is really undermining our future contests that we have if you have these strange secret criteria.
Oh, no. It's always Turkish Delight.
Oh, okay.
From here on out, any contest entry that includes Turkish Delight wins automatically.
Mm-hmm.
We might have to change that, huh?
It depends what the next contest is, I guess. I guess if it's mail us a food, then we might have to change it because it won't be challenging.
Yeah, maybe we should change it.
That should be the next one, mail us a food.
Okay, well, congratulations to Patrick. He'll get the poster in the mail. Thanks to everybody who entered, especially those of you who put a lot of effort into it. We really appreciate getting all those entries.
Yeah, they were really great. Cool. Thank you, everybody.
Really cool to hear those stories, and we'll be right back on Jordan, Jesse, Go. La, 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 la. This is Jordan Jesse Go. I am Jesse Thorne, America's radio sweetheart.
I'm Jordan Morris, boy detective.
Listen, we are just about out of time on this week's show. This is a big, fat one. But we felt like we couldn't really end the show without playing this one call that we got. And normally, we get a lot of calls on old shows,
yeah,
on topics that have already been discussed.
People have them sitting on their hard drives and don't listen to them. That's fun. Thank you for calling
in.
Yeah,
thanks for calling. It's nice of you to call, but we're not necessarily going to play it.
Yeah.
We'll listen to it. We'll take it under advisement.
Yeah.
But we're not necessarily going to play it.
We'll make fun of your weird voice.
Yeah, to each other, but not on the radio.
No.
If that's what you were hoping for. But in this case, we had to make an exception. Granted, this topic is a little bit old. Well, you'll hear it, and we can talk about why we wanted to talk about it.
Hey, Jordan, Jesse, this is Ashley from Texas. And oh my gosh, please, whatever you do, do not get Nintendogs. That thing is so annoying. My cousins and I went on a trip one time, and the Nintendogs, to get them to do what you want them to do, you have to talk to them into this microphone. And so the entire time we were on this hugely long car drive, my cousins are sitting there like, speak, sit, roll over, stop, no. And for a little while I thought they were talking to me, and it was just awful. Please, 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 for the people that are going to be around you, and for your own sanity, you don't want to get Nintendogs. Other than that, the DS is a lot of fun.
Now, Jordan, are you on board with this idea that I have? Ashley is the official caller of Jordan Jesse Go.
I like it.
Ashley is, she just came in, she hit the ground running.
Yeah.
She knows what she wants. She knows how she's going to get it. She's going to tell this anecdote about a trip.
Mm-hmm. And she's going to be clearly 16 or 17 while doing it.
And guess what? We got another message from her. I'm not going to play it.
Okay.
She says she's 17 in the message.
I think, yes. And I think that I like that. So I think we need a listener who will call in, be enthusiastic, and maybe make us a magazine collage.
Exactly. And God bless Ashley for being that listener.
Yeah,
official listener.
That was a great, yeah, Ashley, you're full of pith and vinegar. That's like what an old guy's full of.
Piss and vinegar?
No, pith and vinegar.
No, not pith and vinegar.
Look it up. Look it up. We're
piss
not going
to. Piss and vinegar, not pith.
Pith and vinegar.
Not pith and vinegar.
Look it up. We're not.
Okay.
We're not going to make, this isn't going to be another edition of How I Was Wrong. This is, we have to settle this now.
Pith and vinegar. Okay, here's a forum discussion. Pith and vinegar or piss and vinegar?
This is on somethingawful.com.
This is on something called egg corn.
Egg corn? But there is debate. I'm not just making this up.
Okay, there are 127,000 pith and vinegars. Let's see how many piss and vinegars there are. 360,000. Oh. Looks like
no, just numbers don't.
Oh, here on randomhouse.com, there's a quote from Steinbeck where he says, "Full of piss and vinegar."
Here's the thing, though. Steinbeck loved colloquialism, so like someone's
like,
getting it wrong.
Like, for example,
he would write that
a
way.
A good example of a colloquialism that Steinbeck loves is piss and vinegar.
No, but that could be a character getting it wrong because they are of a lower class.
That's not a colloquialism, Jordan. That's a malaprop.
Fine.
Da-da-da-da-da-da.
Literary discussion of literary tropes aside, I'm saying that just because there's more Google hits doesn't mean it's true. I mean, I think I probably more people say piss and vinegar, but I think it's actually pith and vinegar.
No, what is pith?
Jesse, I don't have time for your crazy discussions. I'm just saying that I think it's pith and vinegar and we should move on.
Okay. I think this fight illustrates something that needs to be addressed.
What?
Ashley, is that our caller's name? Ashley?
Yeah.
Ashley's 17 years old, and I'm worried that we might be a bad influence on her.
Yeah,
I feel like this is a.
She's still in her impressionable stages.
What can we do
to be better role models?
To be better role models for Ashley.
Ashley specifically.
Ashley is 17 years old. She listens to this show. God bless her for it. She's full of piss and vinegar. She's got a lot of attitude, a lot of spunk.
Mm-hmm.
I like the way she thinks. I like the way she talks. I like that she's, isn't she from the South somewhere? Isn't she from like Asheville?
Houston,
Texas. I like that she's from Houston, Texas. I was guessing Asheville, North Carolina, but you know, I like Houston, Texas too. She doesn't have a lot in her life. She's got her friends.
She might.
She's got her friends.
Yeah. No, she probably, you're right. She probably doesn't.
She's got her friends.
Some friends.
Houston, Texas. It's not an exciting place. A big populous place, but not a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Then she's got Jordan Jesse Go.
Mm-hmm.
I want to make her life a better life.
A rich life.
A rich life. What can we do? 206-984-4FUN. That's our action item for this week. Don't we have one other action item?
Do you think Quentin Tarantino and Robert Rodriguez are new sincerity?
Yeah. What do you think of that? Tell us, give us your 2 cents on that issue. 206-984-4FUN. There's one more, isn't there?
I don't know. What did we talk about?
We talked about movies. Yeah.
We talked about...
You can figure out what the other one is.
Talking about that big dog you had to take care of?
No, we didn't talk about that big dog I had to take care of.
No.
Jordan, you think that now that we addressed rhetoric as being the most important value of David Mamet, that all you have to do is just say some funny words and everything will be forgiven?
Isn't that basically how it works? I'm skating through life, Jesse.
As I understand it, that is your role on this program.
Yeah. I don't offer any technical assistance at all.
Anyway, we will
see. I basically leave right after it's done.
We'll see you on the internet at MaximumFun.org, in the Sound of Young America Maximum Fun forums. You can, of course, email us at JJGo@MaximumFun.org. We got any other closing words? Next week, the results.
Yeah. Next week, our guest is Bucky Sinister.
Bucky Sinister.
Who is a popular zine publisher.
Zine publisher and rock and roll poet.
Yeah. Oh, he has some funny poems about comic book characters, Wonder Woman specifically. They are really good. I mean, you'd think if a poem about a comic book character would be bad. It's not. It's good.
And he also used to be hooked on the junk.
Yeah, so maybe.
And he's pretty open about that. We might ask him about that.
Yeah.
If you have any questions for a guy who used to be hooked on the junk. He's not. He's clean. He's been clean for quite some time. But
yeah, so he says.
I just think it's kind of interesting. I don't think anybody else I know was ever hooked on the junk.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I don't know.
I mean, I think, you know, my parents.
Oh, me.
Oh, were you hooked
you
on
know
the
me.
Junk?
Yeah, I was hooked on the junk pretty much all throughout college.
Really?
Yeah.
We were pals in college. I didn't ever.
No, junk the whole time.
You told me you were diabetic.
No, well, no, I wasn't diabetic. I was shooting heroin into my ball sack.
Oh, I always wondered why your ball sack. Well, anyway, we'll talk more about this next week on Jordan, Jesse, Go.